thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
Here we go. It's my challenge each and every day. I hope you enjoy. It's 108. Hi, it's John Williams live in the Allstate.
Lord have mercy.
Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, here all the way until 3 o'clock. Yes, I work an hour and 52 minutes each and every day for you.
I'm bumming it now, down the town.
On the one. I've told you in the past that I've been moving gradually from Minnesota to Chicago. I've been here, Brendan the dogs, Daisy, our dizzy dappled dachshund, and Bingo, the hunchback wiener dog. They all still live in Minnesota. And step by step, we're selling our house up there and buying a condo here and doing all of those things. But as I've had a dual life for a while, you know, I've been on both radio stations here, WGN in Chicago and WCCO in Minneapolis for a while. I've sort of had two homes, two teams, two radio stations, two work families. My two baseball teams, I'm sorry, White Sox, have been the Chicago Cubs and the Minnesota Twins, and you can understand why. And Brenda pointed out to me this morning that the world champion Chicago Cubs have a worse winning percentage than the Minnesota Twins do. Last year, the Cubs won 103 games in the regular season, and last year, the Twins lost 103 games in the regular season. So for me, it was a 50-50 season. Happy to win the World Series. Wish that my other team had done a little bit better. It was a miserable year for baseball in Minnesota. Now the Twins are 14-11. They're at 560, leading the AL Central. And the Cubs, at 556, are 15-12 and lead the NL Central. Neither of those would put them in first place in the other divisions. Those are the two worst first place records. But it sure was fun to watch the Cubs last night because it was one of those games, and I don't know if we had this feeling all year long last year or maybe this year, now knowing how good we were and are, or at least can be, that you have this feeling. But the feeling is this, that you can be down and it's not really going that well and you're down 3-1 or 4-1 or whatever it is. And it can be the fifth, sixth, seventh inning and you still kind of have this, yeah, I think we're going to win. No evidence on the TV that that was about to happen. But you just knew eventually somebody was going to get a hit and then somebody was going to knock them in and something crazy was going to happen and we win these baseball games. It's been fun to see the way some of these have been playing out. And there's a sort of, I don't know, confidence that at least as a fan I have this year that I sure didn't have in years past. And I don't remember when I got that feeling last year. But you go down three, down two, whatever. You go, yeah, we got this. We got them where we want them. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Their ability to come back is amazing.
It's really fun.
And it really is.
Another way to
and
win.
And you don't count them out.
I know, well, that's it. Now, another way to do it is to not get behind. I mean, that's an option that they can always exercise. And there have been times this year where you go, yeah, we're not there yet. You know, I mean, we got a lot of guys hitting in the low 200s that should not be. And some of the pitching has been head scratching at times.
But do you think we have a false sense of security because they are the World Series champs?
Well, we are in first place. I don't know that it's a false sense.
I mean, it is the Cubs. Remember.
No.
108 years,
no,
all that good stuff.
One year. No, it's 1 year. It's not 100 years. It's 1 year. It's
right. That's what I'm saying. It's 108 versus one. So we can't, you know.
Oh, no. I think that actually that thing
about. Count our chickens yet.
Oh, I think you can. I think the 108 years thing that you're referring to no longer lives. That died.
It's done.
Last November.
Gone. Okay.
So now it's like, hey, we're the reigning champs. All that other stuff, it's gone. So I think we have a sense of security, and I don't know if it's a false sense of security or not. We're going to try and drop in between now and 3 o'clock on what's going on in the House as we continue to follow the House vote for the revamped Affordable Care Act that the Congress is debating. Oh, now I'm looking up at the votes there right now. Let me see here. Yays.
It's starting right now, John.
Yeah. So, and are they doing a roll call vote? Are we able to listen in on any of this, Elif? If we are, I don't know what we would be listening to.
Yeah, we're working on that right now. We will get it on.
Okay. And by that, you mean we'll listen to the audio.
Yes.
So it looks like, Kim, are you able to tell health care law replacement final vote, time remaining 4 minutes, 16 seconds, 4 minutes, 14 seconds. So they're clicking down the clock, and they're all voting. So it looks like they're not standing and giving speeches. They're just hitting buttons. The yeas, Republicans, are 176. The nays are all the Democrats, 134. No, actually, there's some. There's 12 Republican nays. That's the number we need to be watching, right? It's supposed, if it gets to 22, I believe it doesn't pass. And there are now 13 Republican nay votes, 14 Republican nay votes, with how many remaining? I think 86, now 81. Ooh, I'm doing play-by-play. Skip past to the left side. Republican Jukes left, goes right. So Republicans 185-16, Republicans 0-158. With 72 votes remaining, there are now 16 nay votes. 16 nay votes. Not voted yet. 34 Republicans still to vote. 34 Republicans still to vote. 29 Democrats still to vote. Am I doing this correctly, Steve?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't put too much stock in it because
why?
They have different times to vote. But I mean, we can drop in and listen to ABC if you want to listen to the as they count it down.
Okay, go ahead.
We're about a minute away from that, but they'll look at it. You know, because they're voting, as you said, electronically. It's not.
Yeah, but I mean, if the measure doesn't pass here, right, Steve? Then it doesn't pass, right? This is the House vote, correct?
Yeah, it is. But I mean, what I'm saying is that it's not, they're not voting in any order. Some of them might be waiting to vote or things such as that.
Okay. Well, it's 17 nay votes with 25 Republicans still to go.
Okay. So you've got 17 Republicans voting no.
No. And the number is 22. Is that the break-even line?
22 is the number that they need.
Five of the remaining 23 Republicans vote no, then the measure doesn't pass.
And it'll be interesting to see if they're actually waiting to see how it goes and holding votes back, or, you know, if all of this is cast in
with
stone.
With 33 votes left, there are now 18 nay votes on the Republican side.
Let's go to ABC here.
This is live coverage from ABC News. Here is ABC News correspondent Aaron Katursky.
The House of Representatives is now voting on a Republican bill to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act, a culminating moment after 7 years of promises. This vote was held up over concerns the bill would undermine protections for Americans with pre-existing conditions, but it does appear now that Republicans have the votes they need. ABC's Maggie Rulli is on Capitol Hill. Let's go to her live. Maggie.
Aaron, this is still a razor-thin nail-biter of a vote. We do expect Republicans to just squeak by. They were very confident as they headed to the House floor. But again, everyone is watching this vote unfold. They need 216 votes. That's the magic number. And they can afford to only lose 21 GOP members. So 21 to get to 216. Paul Ryan is going to be sweating if he approaches that number right now.
ABC's Maggie Rulli on Capitol Hill. This bill phases out Obamacare subsidies in favor of tax credits to help Americans buy insurance. It ends penalties for Americans without insurance, phases out the expansion of Medicaid, and allows states to opt out of the requirement that insurers cover basic services like maternity, mental health, and ambulances. I want to turn to ABC News political director Rick Klein.
Okay, there's 18 nay votes on the Republican side, 18 and 11 votes still to be cast on the Republican side.
Politics will take a very long time to unpack around this, Aaron. And here's the thing. This is something that has been on the Republican wish list for so long. It's almost hard to remember how long it's been a priority. And it's gained in importance over time. It's become a unifying issue for Republicans, and they need to stick together today to be able to make this happen. Ultimately, if Trump Care does replace Obamacare, it will be the results that matter. But if President Trump's able to get...
Nine votes left, 19 nay votes.
You can hear the applause on the floor of the House of Representatives as this bill nears passage. They are just a couple of votes away. Let's bring in ABC News Deputy Political Director Shoshana Walsh. This is big for President Trump, and he has already said if they're victorious,
five votes left,
going to bust the House Republicans over to the White House for a press conference.
19
days. He's already given us his scheduling update, so it shows how confident the White House seems to be that there is going to be a successful pass for them. This is unlike what happened just a few weeks ago, where we were watching and we were so close, but they pulled that vote before they got to the floor.
You can hear the chant on the House floor. Na na na, hey hey, goodbye. A song from Steam, as the House has reached the threshold it needs, 216 votes to repeal and replace a large swath of the Affordable Care Act. Let's return to the Capitol with ABC's Maggie Rulli. Maggie.
you hear the Republicans right now. This is what they've been waiting for.
20
this
nay
very
votes.
Moment.
20
you know,
nays.
They've cited today more than 7 years in the making, more than a month now of back and forth negotiations within their own party. You know, I love listening to this chant right now from them because it just shows you how amped up they have been all day. Earlier today, Paul Ryan huddled together his team, gave them a last-minute pep talk. We're told that they even had the Rocky theme song playing in the background. House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy put up a photo of General George Patton with the quote, "Accept the challenge," so you can feel the exhilaration of victory. So they are attaching so much more to this than just healthcare. They are almost attaching the future of their party. For them, this is about more than healthcare. It's about where they go from here as Republicans.
ABC's Maggie Rulli on Capitol Hill.
So the ayes are 217, the nays are 213. The bill is passed, and without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
By a margin of 4 votes, the House of Representatives has passed a bill to repeal and replace a large part of the Affordable Care Act. You heard the vote, 217 to 213.
So there you go, John Williams, as they sing, na, na, na.
Hey, 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 that was a Sox game, or was that a...
1977, the Go-Go White Sox.
Members of the Chicago...
Were they the Go-Go White Sox?
Yeah, 1977. Go-Go Sox, yeah. The Go-Go Republicans.
Yeah. I don't know if that song's been sung, so they were singing goodbye to Obamacare, obviously.
I was impressed that the ABC News anchor knew that was from Steam. How much you want to bet there was somebody younger than him in his ear going, "That's steam. Say steam."
Or older in his ear.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, now that you mention it. Yeah.
But so that, interesting that they weren't so much praising what they've passed. They were singing goodbye to Obamacare.
And 22 votes was, they needed 21 to pass, and they got 20. You know what I'm doing. If there were 22 votes nay, it would not have passed. And there were 20 nay votes on the Republican side. Democrats were not there. The Democrats did not cast any votes for the new act. Okay, so on to the Senate you go, and we'll see how that'll be fun.
Well, that's the big one right now. They're breathing a sigh of relief because they're done with it. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they're done with it in the 2018 midterm elections, but... Right now, Paul Ryan and those guys who've been dealing with this albatross for a while, move it on to Mitch McConnell.
Yeah,
and his arms are wide open.
You know, we talked to Jim Banks, the Republican Indiana congressman, a couple of weeks ago, and he's going to join us after 2 o'clock to talk about his vote. We'll also visit with Amy Goldstein, who is the health policy reporter at Washington Post, and she has a few things to say about what the... preconditions? What do we call that? The
pre-existing
conditions. What happens now with pre-existing conditions? And we'll do that in the 2 o'clock hour. It's interesting because another part of this story that has a second set of legs today is the Jimmy Kimmel monologue. Huffington Post today or last night was crowing that maybe Jimmy Kimmel's monologue about his son's heart defect might have actually changed the tide on this. Oh, no, it did not. It may have had something to do with it. It was certainly a heartfelt monologue, but it also got some pushback. It was surprising what happened. Even the White House's Sean Spicer was talking about that. And I think the exchange about this and the appropriateness of what Jimmy Kimmel did has been a surprising and interesting debate today. Let me play Spicer. Let me play Kimmel. I've got just a few seconds of each after this. Members of Congress broke out into this song moments ago as they waved goodbye in the House to the Affordable Care Act. Just a few more than half of the House was singing that song, whooping it up, cheering and applauding. Off to the Senate it goes. So, all right, you can turn that down and off now, right? And then let's just go to one other thing here about this story. And that was Jimmy Kimmel's emotional monologue the other night. You know, I played part of it for you yesterday, but just to give you a 30-second flavor of how Jimmy spoke about the fact that right after his son was born, he and his wife discovered that he had a congenital heart defect. Here's just a sampling of that.
You know, before 2014, if you were born with congenital heart disease like my son was, there was a good chance you'd never be able to get health insurance because you had a pre-existing condition. You were born with a pre-existing condition. If your parents didn't have medical insurance, you might not live long enough to even get denied because of a pre-existing condition. If your baby is going to die, and it doesn't have to, it shouldn't matter how much money you make.
Jimmy Kimmel talking about the whole thing from when the baby was delivered to then actually dipping his toe into politics, into healthcare policy. And he was very funny and he was in tears at times, but he kept it together and he delivered what some of us thought was a very rounded message. White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer yesterday said that Donald Trump shares the same concerns about healthcare as Kimmel.
We share that concern for the Kimmel's child, as well as any child that needs care. And that's frankly why the president fought so hard to improve the bill like he did this morning, to make sure that there was that extra layer of protection for anybody with a pre-existing condition, no matter their stage in life.
Sean Spicer speaking on behalf of President Trump. President Obama tweeted, "Well said, Jimmy, Tuesday afternoon." The president wrote, "That's exactly why we fought so hard for the Affordable Care Act and why we need to protect it for kids like Billy, and congratulations." But others took a different tone. This is former Illinois Representative Joe Walsh. "Sorry, Jimmy Kimmel, your sad story does not obligate me or anybody else to pay for somebody else's health care." He said, "Got no problem with at Jimmy Kimmel tearing up and getting political. Got a big problem with we need gov-run health care because of my sad story." He wrote, "Sorry, Jimmy Kimmel, your sad story does not obligate me or anybody else to pay for somebody else's health care." Daily Beast conservative columnist Matt Lewis said he understands where Jimmy Kimmel is coming from, but that monologue was a little cheap. He said, "I don't think that this is the right move for him to do, to politicize this." Washington Times columnist Charles Hurt, about Jimmy Kimmel's monologue, said, "Really, Jimmy? Does your newborn child not mean more to you than petty politics? How do you look at the miracle?" He wrote, "How do you look at the miracle of your child and think partisan politics?" Spicer stressed that the most...
That's unbelievable.
You know, everybody looks at life through their own filters, and mine is not theirs. Spicer stressed that the most important part of Kimmel's monologue was the end, during which he emphasized that health care should not be a partisan issue.
"We need to make sure that the people who are supposed to represent us, the people who are meeting about this right now in Washington, understand that very clearly. Let's stop with the nonsense. This isn't football. There are no teams. We are the team. It's the United States. Don't let their partisan squabbles divide us on something every decent person wants."
That was him calling out Republicans and Democrats alike. According to me, but maybe not you. It's 1:31. Okay, so the healthcare writer for Washington Post, and maybe, maybe not Jim Banks from Indiana because he's on the House floor, but he is lawmaker and he's scheduled to join us.
They're all jumping on buses and going to the White House right now.
Seriously?
Yeah.
For some what?
Partai.
Seriously, they're going to go on, literally?
Yeah, the Republican members of the House are boarding buses, we're told. For sort of a makeshift rally at the White House to celebrate this vote.
By the way, did I just say literally?
Did I just say partai?
Okay, so they're all going to go there to celebrate the House. But remember,
the passage, yeah.
I'm so partisan. You can tell that I wasn't rooting for this thing. I don't know if I'm not rooting for this thing because I think it's bad policy or because it's hard for me to get behind anything that the current president is behind, but I'm a little surprised at this behavior since they haven't one yet. This is going to be on your mind all day now. You know that would have been impressive if maybe Speaker Ryan grabs the microphone. And some of the congressmen kind of lean in and they've got a dance move.
Yeah, okay, so... you know, what's the first thing they teach you in journalism school, John?
Never really spent a lot of time there.
No, that's not it. Never assume.
Never. When you assume, you make an ass of you and me.
Right. And so we heard them singing that. And I think ABC even was talking about the Republicans singing that.
Yeah.
Politico and CNN. And this makes more sense.
Yeah.
They're saying that it was the Democrats singing
it. Are you serious?
And what they were saying was, "You're toast. you're going to lose in 2 years.
Are you kidding?
And you know what? I'm sorry. I jumped to the conclusion earlier.
I think I led you down that road.
No. It's a
natural conclusion. Okay, keep going.
But instead, it was Democrats singing at the Republicans that they just cast their death vote here. And that makes more sense. That's... It's still not very mature, but it's more mature. There's more mature than singing goodbye to Obamacare, by much. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I think it's petty either way. So if you're going to do it, I think you have to.
Sounds different now.
Actually, I think this is the appropriate song to play, and I fully endorse its use on the House floor. So the Democrats are singing that. I wonder if that was orchestrated, if they had that in mind, you know? If they said, okay, guys, if this thing fails, because even the president himself wasn't sure, nobody knew for sure how this was going to go. Donald Trump, who is, if nothing else, confident. I mean, give the guy credit. He strikes out 3 times. He thinks he's going to hit a home run the next time. He thinks he's going to hit a grand slam with nobody on.
He thinks he did hit a grand slam.
So this was... let me just get you to the president's tweet here about this, just moments before the vote. But I think I can do it better if I find the appropriate soundbite to go with that. Oh, where did it go? Where did it go? Hold on a second. Here's the president's tweet. If victorious, Republicans will be having a big press conference at the beautiful Rose Garden of the White House immediately after the vote. I think we know which Rose Garden you're referring to, Mr. President, but it's your tweet. If victorious, he wrote, but notice the big if there. If victorious, and he did that 26 minutes ago, so just before the vote, he said, if victorious, Republicans will have a big press conference at the beautiful Rose Garden of the White House immediately after the vote. So you're right, Steve. They all jumped on buses, and now they're going to have sandwiches and, I guess, tea or coffee or whatever it is that they all have over there. So the Democrats burst out into that song. That's dark. Tony, you're on WGN. You wanted to say what? Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, John. Well, you know, I'd like to say that, first off, I stopped watching Jimmy Kimmel a while back along with a lot of those late-night shows.
Yeah.
Because it just got sickening to listen to these people. All they did for two-thirds of their monologues and their show was make fun of Trump and just go on and just rip this man every which way. What I've learned about Democrats, and by the way, I used to be a Democrat. What I've learned about them is they're very nasty people. They don't ever sit back and just say, well, you know what? Let's let this go and see what goes on. That's what the Republicans did when Obama came in, okay? And by the way, I voted for that man, and I wish that I hadn't. And what I'd like to say that the more people are watching what's going on, I've talked to more and more people that said that they wish that they didn't vote for Hillary because they see how nasty the Democrats are. They had a nasty campaign, and they continue to be that way. And I'm sick and tired of seeing people like Jimmy Kimmel, which, by the way, most of these things wouldn't even affect him, or anybody like him.
Right, he's very rich, yeah. He's got all the money in the world, right.
Well, I mean, he's got more than I do and you do,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
And most of these things wouldn't even bother these people, you know. But my point is, you know, is that everybody sees what's going on, and they continue to do the same thing between protests, not my president, this and that, and they're never going to let this man, they're never going to let him breathe, okay? And all they're going to do is fight and fight and fight. But the one thing that the Democrats are not really thinking about is the fact that everybody's watching them, including other Democrats. And I think all they're doing is they're digging themselves a hole. They can go on and chant and rant and do what they want to do. But you know what? The reason that people voted for Trump to begin with is because they've seen right through Hillary and right through the Democrats. When I first started voting when I was young, my mother told me, make sure you vote great Democratic vote because they're for the people, okay? You know what I found through all my years? I'm 63 years old, and what I found out about Democrats is the fact that they're for themselves. They're not for me. They're for themselves, John. And after a while, you start thinking about that. Then a man named Bruce Rauner came along, and I heard him talking about term limits. That's what we really need. But they don't want term limits.
Tony?
Because if they do that, then a lot of them got to get out of office. They shouldn't be there.
It's been a pleasure, yeah. Tony. I appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good day. That's the Tony Show. Every now and then, I just like to let somebody go unfettered. Hear what's, he feels better. You heard how he felt. In my mind, I'm bouncing back on various things. I mean, remember when Barack Obama became president, Mitch McConnell said that the business of this Congress for the next 4 years will be to make sure that Barack Obama doesn't get reelected. So tell me who's an obstructionist. But you can do that on your own. Wally. I think Wally's on line three. Wally, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hello. I'm calling especially about this last caller.
Yeah?
Who was complaining about the campaign, how nasty it was. I'd like to know who ran a nastier campaign. I don't know. Are these Trump supporters deaf and blind? But I am so very upset over this vote. It's that pre-existing conditions. We're going to all have to start saving money so we can help out our children when our grandchildren get sick. Now, this does not affect me at the moment. I'm a senior, and I'm on Medicare, and I'm guessing sooner or later they're going to attack that one because they don't like, Paul Ryan does not like the entitlements. But I definitely disagree with these callers who are so nasty.
Okay. Wally, thanks for the phone call. I wish you nothing but the best. We're going to go from Wally to on line four. Gene, you're on the air. You're on WGN.
Hi, John. I think that last call was pretty, not the woman, but the gentleman, was pretty funny when you consider that Trump totally insulted his way all the way to the presidency. He insulted every one of his primary contenders when the primary battle or when the nomination battle was going on. He insulted Hillary, encouraged chance of lock her up. I mean, the man has done nothing but insult other people. He sometimes takes it back, for example, on the president of China and China. But it's just, you know, I just, it's such a double standard. I really don't understand it. And the very funny thing about the Joe Walsh, who doesn't want to pay for anybody else's health care, is the last report I read said he owes $177,000 in child support. So apparently he doesn't want to pay for his own children's support either. I thought that was really interesting that he comes out so hardliner, but apparently he lives that.
Gene, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you joining us. It's 1:48. The only thing I'll say about that is that when you talk about the chance, I'm still emotionally recovering from the 100 days in office speech the president gave in Pennsylvania when the crowd, children behind him, started chanting CNN sucks. And rather than hold up his hand or say, now, wait a minute, like John McCain once upon a time did to somebody who was saying bad things about Barack Obama. You remember that? John McCain at a town hall meeting said to the woman who said that Barack Obama was a Muslim, he said, no, he's a good man. We differ on policies. That doesn't play anymore, but that was John McCain. So now there's Donald Trump on the stage. The crowd is chanting CNN sucks, CNN sucks. Children behind him are standing with their fists chanting CNN sucks. And the president, rather than try to quiet it, milked it. He walked around and smiled and gave that all of the air that it needed. It's 1:48. All right, we're done with this. Done with this for now. We'll come back to this, oh, soon enough. The Senate still gets to vote. If you just joined us, they voted in the House to, what did they do? How does that sentence end, Steve Bertrand? They voted in the House to repeal Obamacare, or no, to pass the
they passed a version which effectively it changes the health care laws in the country.
Actually, we still have everything that is in the Affordable Care Act because the law, right? Because the Senate hasn't passed this.
Oh, no,
the president hasn't signed this.
It will be monumentally harder to get a bill out of the Senate than it was to get one out of the House because they still rely on the 60 votes. Cloture vote. So to move forward, the Senate is by nature more deliberative, a little more moderate. So we're a long way away from this being over.
Okay, news coming up. Oh, actually, news in about 10 minutes. A couple more of your phone calls. I had a delightful piece about cursive I wanted to get to. We'll do that in the next hour. Well, I'm really good at that, Steve. And I are having a conversation off the air. You know, the idea is that it would be best if the Republicans who voted for it read it before they voted for it. But I reminded Steve that it would be also just as wise for the Democrats who voted against it to have read it. Maybe it's a swell bill. They didn't read it either, and they voted no. And then where did we go from that?
I just said it's sort of like reviewing a book without reading it.
Which I am able to do.
Easily.
I have the unique ability to review movies based on trailers and to review books based on my review of the book reviews.
Frequently, in fact.
Of which I only read a part. Mother's Day's right around the corner. How about giving mom the gift of dance? An Arthur Murray gift certificate will treat your mom to the world of ballroom dancing, and she's going to love it. Ballroom dancing is tons of fun. It's great exercise. And by the way, it's an excellent stress reliever. Then business should be booming over there right now. Arthur Murray's got 9 Chicagoland locations. One's near you. Call 312-644-7554. Or purchase your gift certificate online at ChicagoArthurMurray.com. That's ChicagoArthurMurray.com. Let's just go to line 4 here. Oh, pardon me. We're trying to get to as many as we can, and the next caller is Mike. Hey, Mike, you're on the air. What can we do for you?
Hi, John. How are you doing?
Good. What do you want to say?
Well, this morning I actually gave a call to Congressman Danny Davis's office. And he actually took my call. I'm just a regular citizen. I'm, you know, just a regular guy. And he had told me that he was not given a copy of the House bill to read for them to consider. He said there had been no debate on it and that everything had been kept in the dark. He had no idea what to expect. And this was at about 9 o'clock this morning. And that's all I have to say. He was a really nice guy, and I was happy he took my call.
You called his Washington, D.C. office and said, I want to speak to my congressman, and they said, hold on, and then he picked up?
Exactly. I call them all the time, and I always ask. but they always say the congressman is not available, the senator is not available.
Yeah.
And so I was as surprised as anybody. But we talked for about 10 minutes, and he was a really nice guy, and like I said, he was in the dark as to what was actually in the bill.
Yeah. Interesting call. I'm really glad you're listening. Thanks, Mike.
Have a good day.
Yep, you do too. Okay, it's coming up on 157. Steve's got the news. Also in the next hour, the president is speaking from the, I believe, Rose Garden.
That'll be the rally that we've been talking about.
The beautiful White House Rose Garden, which is located at the White House. So the president's speech, we'll drop in on that. We have a reporter from Washington Post to talk about what happens to pre-existing conditions. Maybe it's good. Maybe it's not. We'll see what she says. And if we make any time for it, I want to talk about handwriting.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Here's John Williams.
Except for that last one. It is 209. Actually, I think them all. Big ones, little ones. Without a filter, I might add. Here we go. All the way until 3. Thanks for tuning in. This is John Williams. More of the show dedicated to this topic today than I thought it would be, but it's been not only interesting, but I'm glad you've been playing along. Lots of calls. And just one more guess on this topic. We will cut away certainly to the president's remarks as soon as they become available. But Amy Goldstein, jump in here with us for a couple of minutes, health policy reporter at Washington Post, to answer a couple of questions about what this means. Hi, Amy. It's John. You're on WGN in Chicago.
Good to be with you, John.
I think the big component that people are still wondering about is pre-existing conditions. Can you give us any insight into that, Amy?
Yes. Well, pre-existing conditions refer to a lot of acute or chronic illnesses such as cancer or heart failure or asthma or things that people have that require them to need more medical care than people who are healthy. And this has really been a bone of contention among Republicans within the House GOP conference in the past week or so, and finding a way to satisfy what both the most conservative Republicans in the House and more moderate Republicans wanted was really the linchpin to getting enough votes to get this bill passed today. And what happened last week was an amendment was added to the bill that gave states the power, if they wanted to move away from a requirement in the Affordable Care Act that said that insurers could no longer charge more to people who had these pre-existing medical conditions. And that made some of the conservatives happy. But it caused a lot of concern among some of the healthcare advocacy groups around the country and also some of the House moderate Republicans who were worried that the sickest people who most need insurance could be kind of stranded. So in the end, yesterday, another amendment came along that added some more money, $8 billion over 5 years, to try specifically to help such people be able to afford coverage. Whether it's enough money, how many states will try to move away from the federal requirement that's been in the ACA. FDA are still questions that are very much open.
So a state does not have to afford that anymore. That is, a state can say that our insurance companies can deny you coverage if you have a pre-existing condition. Do they have that option? Is that what you're saying?
Well, what would happen is that a state would have to, this is a little bit nerdy, but it's how it would work, a state would have to apply to the federal government, to the Health and Human Services Department, to get permission to say that. And if they got that permission, I don't think that they could outright deny coverage to people with pre-existing medical conditions, but they could go back to the pre-ACA era in which they could charge those customers more.
Well, maybe they should, right? I mean, if I do have a pre-existing condition, I am going to use more healthcare services perhaps, or they will be more expensive if I do. Maybe the logic behind that is sound, Amy.
Well, this has been a debate that has gone on for years and years and years, long before, you know, this recent kind of rush by the new administration in Washington in the White House and the House Republicans to try to get this bill passed. There's been a longstanding debate about how best to ensure people who do need more medical care, whether they should be part of the overall insurance pools, which is what the Affordable Care Act strategy was, or whether they should be covered by separate plans that are just for people who are sick. Before the ACA came along, about two-thirds of the states had something called high-risk pools that were just an attempt to make sure that people who were sick or had histories of illnesses that made insurers wary of them, that those people could get coverage. Now, in practical terms, these often turned out to be very expensive kinds of insurance that states underfunded often and that were too expensive for the people who needed them. There's been a lot of back and forth over many years over what to do with these customers.
Has this resolved that? I mean, this is
well,
the resolution, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is one idea for how to resolve it.
Yeah.
You know, today's bill is just a first start. Obviously, what's just passed the House will now go to the Senate, where there aren't quite as many conservative Republicans. And, you know, who knows what ideas are going to emerge there over how perhaps to adjust the ideas that are in this House bill.
Is this robbing Peter to pay Paul, though? That is, we say, all right, we can't afford that, so we're going to go ahead and put you in these separate pools, but then we're going to set money from everybody else, once again, aside to help you afford it so that your premiums will stay low. Well, that was the idea with Obamacare to begin with. So is this really fundamentally different in that?
Well, I think even beyond this question of people with pre-existing medical issues, there are larger robbing Peter to pay Paul questions and different ways of looking at this. Overall, this bill would mean that the federal government is spending less to carry out government health care policies than the Affordable Care Act has been doing for several years. The bill would, for instance, eliminate taxes that have been part of the ACA that have helped to pay to carry out parts of the current law. For instance, taxes on insurers would go away. Taxes on individuals and families with high incomes would go away. There are also, in this bill, very different ideas for how to structure some form of financial help for people who buy individual health plans. And the bottom line of that is there are winners and losers. On balance, younger adults and healthier people would probably, for the most part, pay less than they do under the Affordable Care Act's marketplaces. But older people, older adults, pre-Medicare age, people in their 50s and early 60s, on balance, would be paying significantly more. So there's just a big set of trade-offs that are carried out, that are embodied in this legislation.
I have about 60 seconds left. Can you just tell me generally, and I'll bet you can't, what's this going to do to people's premiums? I mean, forget the high-risk pools, just speaking generally about people. The complaints on all the talk shows have been that our premiums are through the roof and we can't afford them with the deductibles alone. So what does this do to people's premiums generally or the cost of their insurance?
Well, I've got a very simple, vague answer for you, which is time will tell. I mean, that's the big question, right? I mean, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
It's a question that has several parts. I mean, what will insurers do overall? This is right at the time of the year with insurers that have been participating in the ACA marketplaces, the exchanges, needing to decide whether they're going to participate again for the coming year. So there are a lot of things that are up in the air right now.
It's nice to talk to you, Amy. I hope you can join us again. I see the president is getting ready to address the world, certainly members of the Republican members of the House on the White House lawn. So we're going to cut away to that. But thanks for your time this afternoon.
Glad to speak with you.
Amy Goldstein is the health policy reporter for, it says here, Washington Post. Washington Post? I play-by-play things harder than it sounds.
I was thrown because the name of the pitcher for the Phillies is Elfin, and he's really tall.
Like I said, it's a very challenging thing. You need to keep focus on certain facts and describe seamlessly. I don't think there's a harder job in play-by-play than the one John Weideman does.
Oh, man.
Live radio hockey. Play-by-play, that is the most skilled wordsmith. David Ennett, if you're listening, you're right there with him, but you don't do hockey.
I don't have the focus to follow him, let alone do the job.
I know. Well, and sometimes it actually doesn't matter the focus to follow him. He's just a poet. He's just a fast-paced poet, Weideman is. You know, Dave is too. I mean, I admire those guys. I really do. I mean, I talk on the radio for a living, and I've done it my whole life. I can't do what they do for 1 minute.
Oh, there's the foul ball at the Cubs Park.
Crickets. I was a play-by-play guy early in my career when I worked at WSPY Plano. You want to hear my play-by-play story?
Yeah.
So I'd get off the air
right
around
now?
2 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'd have to hurry over to the place. Actually, my shift was supposed to go to like 5, and the games would all start at 7, and I would do Joliet Catholic and Marion Catholic and some of those schools, and then I would do Lincoln Way, whatever the game was that we could sell on the schedule. We did a bunch of games. So I'm the play-by-play guy. I have no business being the play-by-play guy. But I was also the afternoon guy at WSPY in Plano, which isn't as impressive as it sounds because it was an automated station. So reels of music would play, and every now and then I'd cut in and say, "You're listening to FM 107. Only back then it would be, "You're listening to FM 107. That was me. So then I'd rush over when that shift was over, and I'd get over to the Joliet Catholic Stadium. A lot of times they'd play over at the big stadium there, the municipal stadium
in
Joliet. Mm-hmm. And so I'd rush up there with this great big metal box with all my equipment and my headphones. And this, I swear to God, happened. I then get into the broadcast booth, and literally the teams are lining up, and I'm plugging in things and getting headphones and trying to find a phone line that needs to be plugged into my box, and I'm ill-equipped. But I'd done my homework beforehand, so I had each team's players, rosters, little notes written out, one offense, one defense. So the game started, and I was on the air. And I did the entire first quarter with the wrong sheet in front of me.
It was a baseball game, right?
No, it was a football game.
Oh, I'm sorry, okay.
But I was doing the wrong players.
No.
So like all of the guys for Joliet Catholic, I was reading the Lincoln Way roster. I would say, that's number 12. Number 12, that's the quarterback. That's Smith. No, it was the wrong team. I did the entire game with the wrong team sheets in front of me.
When I was in high school, I can remember just, you know, you must have been worshipped by the players, though, right, when they saw you? I remember seeing the guys from WKAN.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I was like,
wow.
Oh, man, hey, we're a radio game tonight.
I know that.
There's the guys.
I would see WJOL at the Manuka High School gym, and I thought, oh, my God, we're on the radio?
Right.
Boy, that made it sound special.
I was in a Little League World Series, or not World Series, a Little League All-Star game. I think it was KAN, and I got hit in the arm. It was kind of weird. And so I'm being driven to the hospital during the game, and my parents turn
Seriously?
On the game. Yeah, it just really swelled up. So my parents turn on the game, and I made the best play of my life while I was on the way to the hospital.
No kidding.
It was a line drive to center. Steve Bertrand goes back, and he catches the ball.
Not knowing that there was somebody else in your place.
It was Jamie Boyd.
You see the full-page editorial. It's almost a full-page editorial in the Chicago Tribune today. The first editorial is Emmanuel and Rahner. Is revenge blocking a good deal? Okay, whatever. We've had that conversation. But then underneath, why schools should teach cursive. And then the whole editorial is written in cursive, in handwriting. And among the things they say, they make it look like it's the Declaration of Independence. They say legend has it that John Hancock wanted to make sure King George III could read the name even without his glasses. But the undisputed effect was to adorn the document with a bold flourish. Many, if not most, schools have stopped teaching cursive. Some millennials simply print when they have to write by hand. I put two kids through college, good education. My boys are smart. Their handwriting is that of a third grader. It's amazing how bad my son's handwriting is. The Illinois House would like to reverse the trend. It recently passed a bill obligating every public school to teach cursive. Alabama passed a similar law last year in kinship with 13 other states and the New York City public school system. The Illinois measure would be a favor to students who would get a grounding in the skill that offers intellectual value as well as aesthetic merits. Cursive, they finished, is a form of self-expression. A graceful hand is an asset in writing thank you notes and love letters. By the way, nobody writes thank you notes or love letters anymore, which just aren't the same in a uniform font. Or maybe they do, but they write them in a uniform font. They write them online or they write them in, you know, Word or something like that. There are all sorts of occasions when the ability to put words down in flowing script comes in handy. See? They finished in their handwritten editorial. I wonder how many people read that because it wasn't written that legibly. It was okay, but I've actually seen better handwriting. You do see because I've been doing a lot of electronic signing of documents these days. We're moving, so I have to do a lot of e-signing. And you can write your own signature or just use their version of your name in some sort of script. Or I guess you could print it out. But I've been just selecting the cursive version of my name and then just hitting e-sign, e-sign, e-sign. But I told Elif, my producer, that I believe that this would cut generational lines. People of a certain age will want to keep cursive in our culture. And people under a certain age won't have any use for it.
You never write in cursive. You might think you do, but you never do.
That's what I said to Elif. She says, I think we should keep cursive. I said, when's the last time? She said, well, I signed my name here and I signed my name this. I said, no, outside of that, when's the last time you wrote so much as a paragraph in handwriting?
Paragraph? Sentence.
Well, do you take notes? Do you ever?
Yeah, but I print it.
You print them out.
Yeah, I mean, I hand print. You know, I don't use cursive. I print it.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I go. To me, the main thing is that you can read and write well, and the form that it takes isn't all that important. I mean, I'm the troglodyte here, and I think that handwriting isn't that important. I think it's an asset. I think it's a I'm not sure virtue is the right word, but I think if you have beautiful flowing script, and sometimes you demonstrate it either in your signature or a love letter, I think you can gain favor with that. I do think it's an asset, but I don't think you have to have it. I don't think the schools need to teach that anymore. You with me on that one, Steve?
I think I am, yes.
Not exactly sure what I just said.
Well, no, I mean, I guess they shouldn't teach it. I don't know. I wouldn't mind an introduction, but I don't think it should be mandated, you know.
What's the matter, Ella?
I like it. I like cursive writing. I think it adds a little, it elevates the piece.
What year did you get your English degree, Elif?
In college.
Did you study English?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did.
Wait a minute. What is that all about?
Well,
because
it's just what you would think an English major would be upset about.
That's funny.
Wait a minute. You think that an English, well, I suppose so, Steve. Yeah. I mean, it's because they're word, you know, they live in words, and so maybe they would appreciate handwriting.
And that in the words she uses are usually better than what I can say. So.
Yeah, but I'm a broadcaster. I deal in words, and to me, the value is not in how they look in my handwriting, but how they sound when you read them.
My mom used to say that your handwriting reflects on your personality.
I do think there's truth in that. There is a real tell.
It's another reason I want to type.
But I'm telling you, I think that the handwriting that these kids these days, their handwriting is appalling. I know maybe you've got a kid or maybe you're somebody who's 26 years old and you have beautiful handwriting, but mostly you're not. Mostly 26-year-olds' handwriting are spectacularly bad. And they're really smart kids. They read and write. They're smarter than you and me. But their handwriting is fantastically bad.
Mine is very bad, so.
Yeah, mine's not great. I used to write A papers and get B on them because of my penmanship. Think about that. I mean, really, think about that. That's not right. But I'm better than my kids. My handwriting is better than Grant Griff's. Every now and then I'll see them scrawl something out, like on a check or a receipt or something. And I'm just like, Are you kidding me?
That's so
seriously
funny.
Aren't you a little embarrassed that your letters are that small or that they're not that graceful? There's no personality coming through their signatures because they're not schooled in handwriting.
Okay, but think of the famous signatures or the people in authority whose signatures, you know, it would be a doctor's who you couldn't read, right? So it's almost like you're emulating people who you were supposed to admire as a kid.
Oh, a sloppy handwriting?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, this is not that. I mean, at least those ones. If we're thinking about, say, the signature that you see on a U.S. Treasury note or on a dollar bill, or that you see, look, have you seen Donald Trump's signature?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that easy to read, but it's big, bold, and confident. It is the signature that you would imagine Donald Trump would have. My kids' signatures, I don't think, reflect their personality. It simply reflects their inability to write legibly. Grant Griff, I love you. I raised you. I'm just saying, your signatures look kind of sad. Do you think your signature reflects your personality, Steve? Are you kind of, you look at that and you go, yeah, that's me?
I do. I'm sure it betrays my personality. I don't know what it says, but yeah.
I need to see your handwriting sometime. For all my faults and all my virtues, I think my signature reflects who I am. I think that trait, that signature is not true for students these days. It's 2:46. My phone number is 312-981-7200. Pick up a couple of phone lines. We'll start with Johnny on line 4. You're on WGN. Hey, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
John, welcome back.
Thank you, sir.
Good to hear you. You know what? Chiming in on this. I've got, two things. I've got two daughters, 5 and 2.5, and I'm going to stress, you know, right now the printing and the handwriting. I work in an industry, I work in a sports bar and grill type environment, and I deal with a lot of the Generation Y kids, I guess, anywhere from like 18 to 25.
Yeah.
Most of them look like they write with their feet. I believe watching my kids grow and develop is a big hand-eye coordination thing, and we can use a little bit more of that instead of the thumbs on the keypads, smartphones, and video games and stuff. It is a reflection of intelligence and personality, I do believe.
You sure do see the person's personality when they have a competent signature, but you don't see that anymore. It's just like dribble.
It's right. I mean, sports stars and whatever, yeah, you can get a little scribble and whatever, but when I see signatures on things or, you know, kids writing notes and stuff, and it's a form of communication. If you're not communicating with the basic tools, you know, there's a gap there that we have to fill.
Yeah. So you like the idea of mandating it, that we should continue to teach it in public schools?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, Johnny, thanks for the phone call. Glad you're listening. Appreciate your call. Mark, this is John. You're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yeah, John, I actually schedule around your show now that you're back.
Thank you. How do you
like that?
Literally, just as you were speaking, Elif was in my ear. Could you say that whole thing again?
I say, now that you're back, I actually schedule around your show.
Wow, now I'm flattered. Don't do that. Lead a life. I'll just fill the gaps.
I just happened to read a couple days ago in an article, the author C.S. Lewis, you know, The Chronicles of Narnia.
Sure.
He never learned to type, and he even wrote to someone who asked him for advice on writing, don't use a typewriter. The noise will destroy your sense of rhythm for words. And we're just finding out that the clicking of the keys was probably not the real issue. C.S. Lewis used a quill pen, which means that he had to dip it every few words. And while he was dipping it, he was going over the words in his mental ear, and therefore he was hearing how they would sound. And if you read anything by C.S. Lewis, it sounds like he's talking to you, or it reads like he's talking to you. And so based on all of that, I would advocate learning cursive, because it keeps you in touch with how words sound as opposed to how they look.
Hmm.
There are a lot of novelists now who still do that. They write.
I was reading about that. Somebody who famously of late wrote the whole thing
longhand.
I'm trying to remember who that was, but some people still do that. Yeah,
for that reason, so they ponder over the words.
Yeah, Mark, what a nice call. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. Elif says you've got to get to two more calls, so we go next to line number 2, and that's Linda. You're on WGN. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I wanted just to add on teaching through Montessori schools. Both of my children attended them years ago, and they had learned, and it's now taught in preschools and in studies, learning cursive develops the hand-eye coordination that's necessary to build the reading skills. So if you're not developing that, you're not also gathering all the information around to develop that reading capability.
Wow. Never thought about it
that
way.
There are a lot of studies that confirm this. So
you think
I'm
that's true? Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, you know, the other thing that is part of this, and maybe we don't need to go down this road, but if you are taking the time to teach cursive, which, let's face it, is kind of an old school skill. I mean, people have conversations about whether or not we should teach multiplication anymore. When's the last time you actually multiplied 2 3-digit numbers together? When's the last time you multiplied 2 2-digit numbers together? I guess you could, and it's nice to know how to do it. Trust me, I'm an advocate. But really, that's not necessary if you have a phone, a calculator, a computer. You don't have to do it. You just pull up your desktop, and there's the calculator on there, and you punch in the numbers, and it happens by magic. The point is, what else could you be teaching while you're teaching kids to write between the lines? Let's go to, let's see here, who's next? Sue, this is John. You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I'm all for the cursive, and this is so timely, so interesting, because my husband just told me that the care packages that his corporation sent to the soldiers in Afghanistan, the feedback they got was that the notes written in cursive could not be read by the soldiers.
Isn't that heartbreaking?
They could only read print.
Yeah, what a shame. I mean, somebody sat down and poured their sweet thoughts out to some soldier in a care package, and the guy can't read it, or the gal.
Correct.
Yeah, interesting. Thanks for the phone call. From you, we go to, do we have time for Colleen? Colleen, this is John. You're on line 5. You're on WGN. Hi, Colleen.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to say?
I write thank you notes, handwrite thank you notes, almost once a week. And I also write little notes to my granddaughters who are 9 and 5. And my 9-year-old granddaughter is a learning cursive, and she loves getting the notes. So I hope they don't do away with it. I think that a handwritten note is sort of special these days.
I completely agree with you on that. And I think a love note, if anybody writes love notes anymore, that just feels so much more personal, doesn't it? I think it's that way with thank you notes. If you got married and you're sending notes to people, a handwritten note feels more like you sat down and took the time to do it. Of course you did if you sent them an email, but it feels better if you get a handwritten note. It's helpful if the person that gets it can read it. Anna DeVlantis is writing out her handwriting. She's giving me her personal signature here.
Take a look at it. What do you think,
John? I think that's you. I think that's you.
They say that it looks like the person, the way you sign?
Well, your letters are long and slender, as are you. It's very attractive. It's green in your notch, so there's that difference.
Oh, so that
difference.
Doesn't work.
Yeah, that didn't give you a different pen. I got to read this. When you are looking to get pre-approved to buy a home or refinance the home that you have, you've got a lot of options, your bank, big online firms, any number of local lenders. Here's why you should put Brian Wickard and his team at Acunet Mortgage on your short list of lenders to shop. Acunet's closing costs are typically $2,000 less for the same rate as the high overhead banks or the local lenders. They pay hefty commissions, you know. The other reason is Acunet's extreme convenience. You can get started with a rate quote or rock-solid guarantee pre-approval to buy 24 hours a day at their website, acunet.com. You can also talk with one of their loan consultants until 7 o'clock weeknights. They're open weekends, too, and for refis, they even come to your home. Click the blue button at acunet.com. Click the blue button at accunet.com. Acunet Mortgage is an equal housing lender and an Illinois residential mortgage licensee, NMLS ID number 255368, 13,000 West Silver Spring Drive, Butler, Wisconsin, 53007. Now, the editorial in the Trib today was that we should mandate that the kids learn cursive. Because these kids these days...
They don't learn that anymore.
And they wrote the editorial in cursive. Isn't that adorable?
Beautiful writing. I'm not sure my cursive is that good. And I did take cursive.
Yeah, I did too.
It's fallen away, hasn't it, John?
Yeah, you know, you are a lot younger than me. I'm surprised you did take cursive.
I did, yeah. I even took
Was that a Catholic school or a public school?
Public school, Chicago Public Schools.
Wow.
Very proud graduate of CPS, and we did learn that.
Mr. Khan today?
He's out today, some very important matters, which I think he'll talk about on the air next week. He'll tell everyone where he was. But Richard Roper will be joining us. He has his movie reviews for us. We'll, of course, be covering what's going on in Washington. And it's either the most horrific day or the most beautiful day, depending on which side of the aisle you sit.
But you hear what we did? They started chanting and singing, na 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 na, hey, hey, hey. And we immediately thought, at least I did, listen to those Republicans taunting Obamacare.
There's a lot of taunting.
It was the Democrats.
It was the Democrats, in fact. The na-na-na, goodbye song. That's going on. The beer carts are rolling out. The champagne corks are popping. But is it a win for people who need health care? We're going to keep trying to comb through what is in this bill and talk about what it means for people in Illinois and neighboring states. Plus, we're going to talk about that phishing scam, the Google Docs thing. Did it get you?
Oh, yeah. It did not. It did not.
But I did see something in my own inbox. And I'd already heard about it, thankfully, so it didn't get me. But a tech expert is talking about how the level of sophistication on these new phishing scams has just risen again.
And you know, the weird thing is, maybe the sad thing, too, is that people are sending documents to each other that now don't get opened.
That's right.
I don't click on anything anymore because I'm like, this may be important, but it might not. And you don't open it.
I've kind of adopted that same policy for that reason. So this is what the consequence is. But we'll be talking about that and so much more. Thank you.